Hi everyone, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Thanks for joining us for our Newsworthy Clips article for the month of March. My name is Campbell. It is great to have you here with us. And we also have two of our friends in the studio here. We have Linda. How are you today, Linda?
I'm good. Thank you, Campbell. It's great to be here.
All right, Linda, are you ready to study our Newsworthy Clips article?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, we have a lot of interesting stories to share with you. But before we get started, let's welcome our other guest here. How are you doing, Joshua?
Thank you, Campbell. I'm doing very well and very glad to be back talking about the Newsworthy Clips. I always find these to be very interesting.
Yes, they are. Now, speaking of interesting articles, our first article for the next 3 days is a very interesting one about hair. Now, both of you have a lot of hair.
I'd like to think so.
It's true. I do have a lot of hair.
You guys do have a lot of hair. Now, do you guys lose hair often? You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people, when they wash their hair, like my wife, she sheds a lot.
Yeah, I would say I do, which concerns me sometimes, but you go through different stages.
Different seasons, right. Now, you have long hair too, Joshua.
I do have long hair as well, and I do also, like in the shower, I think just like everyone, you know, end up shedding a lot of hair, but I think you notice it a little bit more when it's longer, but hopefully I also produce as much hair as I shed. I guess time will tell.
Time will tell. All right, well, the reason we're talking about hair is because scientists have found a new way of identifying people, right? And in the past, we might use fingerprints and we might use DNA, but now scientists are able to use hair to identify people. That sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of a movie. This movie came out maybe 2 decades ago. I don't know. It was a long time ago. With Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, called Gattaca.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, it was. It's a really cool movie.
Yeah.
But it takes place in the future, and from a strand of hair, you can find out all about the person maybe that you're interested in. So the girl in the movie, you know, she's interested in this guy, so she gets a piece of his hair, and yeah, she goes and gets that tested, and then she can see if she, you know, wants to date this guy or not.
Okay, well, that was science.
There's anything to hide.
Yeah. Well, that was science fiction, but, you know, it seems that more and more these days, reality is catching up with science fiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we're finding out that scientists can identify people based on the pattern of proteins in your hair. Now, how does that work, and what are some of the practical uses of that? Well, that's what our article is going to be talking about today. So let's get started. We're going to be reading our article on page 18. So if you have your magazine or your mobile device, you can turn to page 18, and we'll start at the top of the page.
Move over, DNA. Scientists can identify you based on the pattern of proteins in your hair. A strand of hair at a crime scene could hold new promise as a means to identify its unique owner and unravel mysteries sealed by the passage of time. In research published in September 2016, scientists from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories reported they are devising a test of human hair that could fingerprint its owner in cases in which DNA evidence is fragmented, damaged, or nowhere to be found. The researchers' discovery, reported in the journal PLOS ONE, addresses one of forensic scientists' most pressing needs, a reliable alternative to DNA identification. DNA is actually quite fragile and notoriously vulnerable to degradation with time and exposure to the environment.
All right, so our title for this section says, Move Over DNA. What does that phrase mean, move over DNA?
Well, literally it could be, you know, for someone, if you want someone to get out of your way, then you might tell them to move over or to make room for something. But here, it's more figurative, right? Mm-hmm. So DNA used to be like the end all for, I guess, for detectives or scientists to like identify someone. Mm-hmm. But now there's something new. So DNA has to make
move
room
over.
For this. Yeah, yeah. For this new process or this new method.
Right. Okay. So this new process involves strands of hair, right? And scientists can identify people based on the pattern of proteins. Now, what are the practical uses of this? Well, the most obvious one is for solving crimes, right? So our article starts off saying a strand of hair at a crime scene could hold new promise as a means to identify its unique owner. Now, that's pretty interesting. You know, we've always heard about fingerprints being unique to each individual,
mm-hmm,
right?
Even
twins have different fingerprints. So no two fingerprints are alike. But now we're finding out that actually hair is different. You know, no two people's hair is the same. And that's pretty amazing. And it can unravel mysteries sealed by the passage of time. So what are we talking about here, Joshua?
Well, so this is a really good way to kind of sort of get into the subject that you were talking about here, mm-hmm, Campbell, where mm-hmm, they can use hair in order to be able to solve mysteries that might have been unsolvable because as time passes, certain evidence like kind of disappears a little
uh-huh.
bit, but that they're saying that with hair, because it stays around for a long time, mm-hmm, you can use that to help you solve mysteries even if time has passed.
That's right. So, you know, when there's a crime that occurs, a lot of the question is always who did it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And forensic scientists, the people who are trying to solve the case, they're always trying to figure out who did it, and they're looking for evidence. They're looking for fingerprints or bits of DNA. And now they have a new tool. They can look for hair. Now, how does this work and where did this discovery happen? Well, it says here in research published in September 2016, scientists from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories reported what, Linda?
That they are devising a test of human hair that could fingerprint its owner. In which cases in which the DNA evidence is not useful.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the vocabulary focus word devise. So that just means to create a plan or some strategy mm-hmm. or come up with something, and usually in a clever way. So they're devising this test or creating this test so that they can use hair
mm-hmm.
to identify the person.
Right, yeah.
And I like that word identify that you use there, Linda, because in the article it says to fingerprint, right? Which is a little bit of a strange, if you would think of a fingerprint being like a noun that you leave behind.
Right.
Or maybe to fingerprint someone by to like actually take their fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
But here we're using fingerprint as like a verb mm-hmm. to identify someone. So
right.
really to like conclusively say that this was this person. So we use fingerprint in this sense sometimes too.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. So as we said earlier, fingerprints are unique to each individual. So if you can find someone's fingerprint and you can connect them to their finger, then you know who did it
exactly.
or who touched that object, right? So in the same sense here, when they find the hair, they're able to now identify individuals based on different proteins of that hair. Okay. Now, the researcher's discovery addresses one of forensic scientists' most pressing needs, right? And again, forensic scientists, these are people that study evidence collected from crime scenes, so DNA, blood samples, things like that, to help to solve the crime. Now, what is one of their most pressing needs?
Finding a reliable alternative to DNA identification.
Right, and why is that such a big need?
It's because DNA is very fragile, mm-hmm. meaning that it's easily damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need some other way, because over time the DNA will break down, as you see here. It's notoriously vulnerable to degradation,
right.
Breaking down. And so after time and then exposure to the elements, it's no longer good.
Right. So notoriously means that it is well known for something bad.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
So it is well known for the fact that it's not very stable and it degrades.
So from what I understand of the way that people compare DNA is that, so everyone has a lot of DNA in common, right?
Right.
So we have more in common with each other than say we do like a starfish.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
So, but there are so many different parts of your DNA that mm-hmm. you can pick out the parts that are different, and then each individual has unique parts that are unique to them,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe they share a little bit more than they would with their family than they would with a stranger.
Right.
But those individual unique parts are the ones that you can use in order to conclusively identify someone.
Mm-hmm.
But then if the DNA breaks down or mm-hmm. degrades, it makes it much more difficult in order to say, oh, yes, is exactly that person, because
right.
part of the DNA isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. So, you know, as the article says, as the DNA is exposed to the environment and as time goes on, you know, oxygen, things like that, it can cause damage to the DNA samples. And so they're not as, I guess,
reliable.
That's,
yeah,
a, good
that's a good word.
Yeah. So, they're trying to find an alternative to that, right? Because they need something that, because sometimes maybe they can't get to the crime scene right away, or maybe it's a mystery that has yet to be solved, and it's been several years,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so they need a new way to be able to identify these people. And, you know, when I think about DNA, I also think about, you know, how people, like you were saying, family members, right? Their DNA is more closely related. So
mm-hmm.
they use DNA to identify family members as well. Right.
Right.
So.
And there have been cases in which people have been falsely convicted, right, based on DNA identification. It ends up it was incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So
yeah.
maybe corrupted or maybe mm-hmm. contaminated. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it leads to like a false positive.
Right.
Exactly.
But my question though is, I mean, like I'm walking around all the time, right? What if my hair just happens to be in that place?
Well, that's true. And so, and that's something that happens. Everybody leaves parts of themselves behind, whether it's like skin cells or hair
right.
cells and all
right.
that.
Or fingerprints.
Or fingerprints, right? Although
yeah.
most people, now, if you're going to commit a crime, most people would suggest that you wear gloves.
But
not that we're suggesting.
Right.
Right.
But see, that's the thing, though, you know, because, you know, you're wearing gloves, but maybe you're not necessarily thinking about your hair and things
it's true.
Like that.
It's very so. True. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Bottom line is, don't commit crime. You don't have to worry about
right,
any of this.
Exactly.
But I do think that they will take like an entire area and they'll collect different samples, and they might mm-hmm. find like, well, here's one thing that's like not like anything else, and maybe it's just like
right.
an older thing that's not connected.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just like when they dust for fingerprints, there'll be more sets of fingerprints there than, you know, maybe before the crime committed.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have to eliminate those possibilities.
Right. Yeah. Or perhaps it's just the fact that there is hair on a specific, you know, piece of evidence.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A key piece of evidence or something. So there are ways. So it's not like you're going to be, you know, falsely accused because you just happened to be in that room or something.
Right. Right. You just happened to shed hair.
All right. Okay. Well, let's keep reading and find out more about this new test.
Every strand of hair is made up of proteins. In addition to being more resilient to environmental damage than DNA, those proteins are like an echo of a person's DNA, said Brad Hart, co-author of a paper and director of Livermore's Forensic Science Center. It's a simple but ingenious idea, conceived in 2013 by the paper's lead author, Glendon Parker, then a biochemistry professor at Utah Valley University, and now a scientist at Livermore. DNA provides the blueprint for proteins. So, the coding quirks found in an individual's DNA will translate into recognizable variants in the proteins, known as single amino acid polymorphisms, SAPs. These SAPs are the protein markers that could guide future forensic scientists in identifying an individual even when DNA is not available. While they can be found in a single strand of hair, they also can be found in shed skin cells, bones, and teeth. Each person's number of hair protein markers, combined with his or her pattern of protein markers, is unique, researchers found. The authors of the report suggest that as many as 1,000 protein markers could be used to identify individuals and distinguish one person from another. But they are aiming to winnow those to a battery of 90 to 100 protein markers, which could be used to pick one individual out of a worldwide population.
So we find out from our article that every strand of hair is made up of proteins, and this is very important. And as we said earlier, hair is more resilient to environmental damage than DNA. That means it can stay around a lot longer, and it's not as susceptible to the degradation that we were talking about earlier. But what is so important about these proteins, and how do scientists use these proteins to identify people?
Well, these proteins are like an echo of a person's DNA.
What does that mean?
So it's a reflection, or it represents the DNA that is in an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can use this echo to also ID someone.
Right. So basically, the DNA affects how your hair grows. And because every person's DNA is different, then your hair is going to be different as well, right? So it says down in line 13 that DNA provides the blueprint for proteins. What are we referring to here?
So a blueprint is an architectural plan. Mm-hmm. So when an architect draws up a plan for a building or a construction project, that is the plan that all of the people who are physically making that building or project will use in order to decide how much or how long or where something goes, right? So here what we're saying is that this blueprint for proteins is the plan that DNA provides in order to build these protein structures, and that because it's unique to individuals' DNA, that there will be something about the way the protein is built that will also be unique to that individual.
Mm-hmm. So again, it still goes back to DNA somewhat, you know. And so the article says it's a simple but ingenious idea. Now, what's the difference between something that is genius and something that is ingenious?
That is a very good question. So someone or something that is genius is obviously someone who is very smart, right? And very good at whatever they're genius in, so maybe music or math or architecture, right?
Mm-hmm.
But something that's ingenious is something that is very clever or something that's been made, so like by someone who is inspired by their genius, in order to really achieve a solution or to make something happen.
Mm. That was an ingenious answer.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little confusing because usually when we see the prefix in, each means not or the opposite of, but here, genius and ingenious.
They're
connected.
Point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're connected. So it's an ingenious idea. And basically the way it works is the coding quirks found in an individual's DNA will translate into recognizable variants in the proteins. So quirks are what?
Those are just differences. Like we might describe someone as quirky.
Mm-hmm.
Their differences from other people are much more apparent.
Right.
It's easy to see that. They might be a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
So quirks, could also be mean inconsistence, but just differences.
Right. And each of us have our own quirks. Right.
Right. That's what makes us unique.
Yeah. Yeah. So every person has, you know, different maybe behavioral quirks. They might drink their coffee in a certain way, or they might speak in a certain way, or walk in a certain way. And these are all quirks that make us unique and different. Now, there are also quirks in the coding in our DNA, and that translates, which means that it then carries over into recognizable variants in the proteins. So then our proteins will be different. And what are these proteins known as?
Single amino acid polymorphisms. That's quite a mouthful.
Yes, very technical term. Okay. Single amino acid polymorphisms. And we know that proteins are made up of amino acids. Okay, so SAPs. Now, these SAPs are the protein markers that could guide future forensic scientists into identifying an individual even when DNA is not available. So now scientists, rather than using DNA to identify another, you're going to be using these protein markers. Now, are these protein markers only found on hair?
No, they're also found in skin cells, bones, and teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So those things could also be used to identify people as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've heard of people using teeth to identify people, but I think that was kind of something different, right?
A little bit different. So that's more like dental records, right? So over the course of time, as you have things done to your teeth, so maybe a crown or maybe a cavity that's been filled, or maybe you have sort of a strange bite that's been tried to correct it. Well, there's records of that. Yeah. Your dentists have that. And so a lot of times what they'll do is they'll compare, say, a skull to a dental record they have to see if the teeth kind of match up to what they expect, right? But they don't necessarily examine anything inside the tooth itself. But here they're saying that they could.
Yeah.
Right?
Which and
is
also
really
in that
cool.
previous example, usually the person's already gone, right? They've passed.
Yes. So
you're not going to do a dental, you know, check your dental records of a person who's alive. Right?
Exactly.
But this is usually, now we're talking about doing something to catch maybe a criminal, right? And usually the criminals are alive. So again, as Joshua was saying, that we're identifying the makeup of the skin cells, bones, and teeth.
Right.
All right. Now, this is really interesting, this next section. It says each person's number of hair protein markers combined with his or her pattern of protein markers is unique. So there are two things that they're looking at here, right, Linda?
Right. The number of protein markers and the pattern of the protein markers.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. You know, it just shows how intricate our bodies are, you know, and just how much of an individual each of us is.
It's true.
Yeah. This actually makes me think of the Bible verse, you know, that God knows, like, the exact amount of hairs on our head.
Yeah.
That's something that, yeah, that is unique about us.
Right.
Or, yeah, that's something. But honestly, I've always found hair to be interesting. Like, they have on the left side here a close-up of three strands of hair. And yeah, maybe it's my biology background. I like looking at things under the microscope. But yeah, I've always been sort of fascinated with hair. I would like analyze my own hair. Just, yeah, like what, you know, what causes it to split, or like why there are different colors. Yeah.
Mine is, why is it turning white? Why is my hair turning white?
I've also, so in the United States for a long period of time, there have been forensic science TV shows like Bones that have been very popular, and you know, I watch a lot of those, and a lot of fun to watch. But they would also sometimes describe how hair can be unique, or it's sort of different. So like the size or the coarseness or the fineness can help sort of like narrow down whether or not it's the same type of person, but not whether or not it's the same individual, right? Because people will share common hair types, and so the hair will be similar but not necessarily unique. So this is really fantastic and very fascinating that now they're able to really see the proteins inside the hair and how it's built and be able to really match that against other people, because this is, I mean, it does break open a whole new area of being able to identify remains that have been unidentified. Like with this, maybe you could even go into, say, like a tomb of the unknown soldier and be able to figure out who that
is
now. Exactly. So, I mean, it really does. It is very, very, very important development in forensic sciences.
Right. Now, I wonder if, you know, instead of fingerprinting people in the future, they're going to just collect hair samples.
It's a very good possibility. It's a very good possibility.
That would be really interesting. All right. So the authors of the report suggest that as many as 1,000 protein markers could be used to identify individuals and distinguish one person from another. But that's a lot of protein markers.
Right.
It's true.
And so they want to winnow that number down or reduce that number to about 90 to 100 protein markers.
Mm, we have the word battery here. What does that mean, a battery of 90 to 100?
Well, we all know what a battery is, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing that you use in order to charge, in order to power a mm-hmm. device. But a battery, there's another, like a military sense of a battery, which mm-hmm. means sort of like resources put into an installation.
Okay.
So like a gun battery, right. for example. So right. you have an area that's supported by a certain amount of guns.
Right.
And it's the kind of the idea is that these then would be those resources that you would use. Mm-hmm. So you would use this battery then of 90 markers in order to be able to compare those to other markers and other pieces of hair.
That's
would
right.
make it like a very useful tool without having to do, you know, literally thousands of comparisons
yes.
each time.
Right, yeah. And they can use this battery to pick out one individual out of a worldwide population. That's pretty amazing.
Mm.
I mean, there are several billion people in the world.
Right.
And to pick one person out of that is pretty amazing.
Right.
All right. Well, this was a very, very interesting article and some new developments in the world of forensic science. We'd love to hear what you have to say about today's article. Can you think of some practical uses for this new technology? If you can, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, remember to join us again. We have two more interesting articles to share with you, so please join us tomorrow as we talk about some special elephants. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye. Bye.